the average person to read today's gospel and to tell you what is the miracle that happens in the gospel today. What's the big primary miracle that happens in the gospel?
I think the average person would read it and say, well, this woman came, her daughter was tormented by a demon, and she was healed. Let it be done for you as you wish, and the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. Bam, there's a miracle. And that certainly is a miracle that happens in the gospel today, but I would argue that is not the primary miracle that is in our gospel. This text from Matthew chapter 15, verse 21 through 28, that's not the primary thing that's happening here. It's easy to miss, but that's not what's actually going on here. So there's some right hidden in plain sight, right in front of us. We've all probably read this gospel 100 times, but hidden in plain sight in this text is another miracle that's taking place. And it's kind of, honestly, it's kind of lost on us because we're reading an English translation from the original Greek. And so some of those nuances are kind of lost, and there's historical context that also helps. But I want to maybe dig deeper below the surface today with this text and kind of extract some of that to show you what's actually going on. So our first contextual clue is the first line, the opening line. At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Now, for us in Kansas 2026, like Tyre and Sidon probably doesn't mean a whole lot, but Tyre and Sidon is not within Israel. It was never historically been part of the nation of Israel. It's to the north, what is current day Lebanon. And those two cities are about 10, 15 miles apart, right on the coast. So they're right there on the beach of the Mediterranean. So Tyre and Sidon are actually kind of coastal towns on the Mediterranean, and they're really kind of a vacation spot. Even today, they're kind of a really nice beaches and vacation spot. So what's been happening in Matthew's gospel, if you recall the last several Sundays, what's been happening many times over is Jesus keeps trying to get away from people. He keeps trying to take his apostles like, all right, guys, let's go. You guys go to the other side. I'll be there in a little bit. And what happens? People find out, the Jews find out, Jesus is going there, and they beat him there. And so they show up, and there's 5,000 people. It's like, okay, well, I guess we're going to feed 5,000 people today. So that's happened 2 or 3, 4 times leading up to today's gospel. And then Jesus, you can almost see what's going on next. He's like, okay, we're going to leave Israel altogether. We're going up to Tyre and Sidon. Jews don't live there, right? So we're going to go up there. And this is the only time, this is a side note, but this is the only time that we know that's recorded that Jesus in his adult ministry leaves Israel. Now, he left when he was a baby, an infant, going to Egypt, but this is the only recorded time where he left the nation of Israel and went up north is today's gospel in Tyre and Sidon. So, behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came and called out, "Have pity on me, Lord, son of David." So, introducing this Canaanite woman. Now, in the historical structure and nature of Israel, Canaan was the enemy. The Canaanites, especially when Israelites first moved in, they were at war, and they basically had been at war at this point for a good 500-800 years, and they hated each other. Even more so, the Canaanites were even more despised than the Samaritans or any of the other people around because of the dark, long history. So they didn't share a common language, and there's just a lot of strife there. But this Canaanite woman comes up. So she wasn't like a Jew who was on vacation up there. This is a Canaanite woman from that district. So that's another important detail. And she comes up and says, "Have pity on me, Lord, son of David." Now this title, this greeting, is a major hint, a major clue of what's going on here. But this is what we lose in English. And especially, God bless the New American Translation, but this is a bad, bad translation. What is translated, "Have pity on me, Lord, son of David," that's not what the Greek says. She doesn't ask for pity. She doesn't want pity. That is such a bad translation. What she says in Greek which would have been kind of their common language, what she says is, and what the original Greek says in Matthew, and you'll recognize this, she says, Kyrie eleison. That's her greeting. Kyrie eleison. What does that mean? Have pity on me? She's not looking for pity. Lord, have mercy. That is her introduction. Lord, have mercy on me. Again, it's completely lost in our translation, but that's what she says. That's what we say at the beginning of every single Mass. Lord, have mercy. We are asking for mercy. We do an examination of conscience. We confess that we've sinned, and then we ask for mercy. We approach the Lord. Before we do anything else in Mass, we ask for mercy. But then this other line, Son of David. Now, Jesus is called Son of David over and over and over again throughout the Gospels. That's not a unique thing here. But that title, Son of David, it means something different to a Jew than it does to a Gentile. Because if you're a Jew, you know the history of Israel. You know that King David was promised to have a son sit on his throne. And there's this lineage that Israel has been waiting for the fulfillment of this promise for so long. And so to call someone the Son of David is, you are eligible to sit on the throne. And Jews knew that. Gentiles, maybe not so much. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But she used that title, Son of David. So she must have heard that from somewhere. But in her mind, again, she's a Gentile. Maybe she doesn't have all this historical religious baggage that the Jews would have had. But she sees Jesus as a miracle worker. Probably as like a magician, maybe some sort of healer. She's heard the stories. Clearly she's heard the stories that Jesus can do stuff. My daughter is tormented by a demon, and here comes the ask. I need help. My daughter is tormented by a demon. But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. The silence of God is probably the single most painful thing that we can endure in this lifetime. His silence. And there are different degrees of silence within God, and they mean different things sometimes, and it's kind of hard to know, but the silence of Jesus. Have you ever been there? You ever prayed, and it's like, anybody there? Anybody there? Anybody there? Help me, help me. Crickets. Why? Why does God do that to us? And not just silence, but even one step further. Now the disciples came and asked him, send her away, for she keeps calling out after us. Keeps calling out. It's kreison, crazy. This crazy lady keeps, it's screaming. A lot of the translation is, she's screaming, she's shouting, she's yelling persistently. And who knows, maybe she's been there all day. We don't know that how long. Long enough to get to annoy the heck out of them. And they're like, get her out of here. Shut her up. He said in reply, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And she's not one of us. She's not from the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I guess I'm reading this and just wondering how many people have sought the Lord in good conscience, in good faith, and been met by and confronted by Catholics or Christians who, instead of inviting people in, drive people away from the Lord. How many people have sought in good conscience, sought the faith, and been confronted by a priest who's an absolute jerk? It makes you feel like dirt. Maybe venturing out in faith, venturing out and like, you know what? just see what this thing, this church thing is all about. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And these people are standing and kneeling and sitting. And I don't know what I'm doing. And then I sit down and the first person greets me and says, "Hey, you're in my seat." And if you've ever experienced that, where you're trying and you've been pushed away by someone who's supposed to be a good Christian or Catholic, I'm sorry. If you ever experienced in confession, it's one of the most, for me as a priest, it's probably the single most heartbreaking thing that I deal with on a semi-regular basis is folks who come to confession, and you can hear the trembling in their voice. Their voice will literally be trembling. And they'll say, "Bless me," something along the lines of, "Bless me, Father, for I've sinned. It's been 20 years, it's been 30 years since my last confession. And the last time I went to confession, the priest just yelled at me up one side and down the other and humiliated me, and I swore I would never come back." And if that has happened to you, I am sorry. And if I have in any way, knowingly or otherwise, been an obstacle, I do apologize. I would love to be able to reconcile. But this lady kept on. She wasn't going anywhere. And I think there's the reason why is because she wasn't there for herself. I think if this lady had been the lady, the hemorrhaging woman who, you know, was just, okay, I tried, I've got rejected, I've been pushed away, been treated with silence, I'm out of here, she probably would have given up. But this lady wasn't there for herself. She was there on behalf of her daughter. And I think that's probably the thing that really pushed her forward, is I'm doing this on behalf of somebody I love and care about. But the woman came to him and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." And again, this is where our English kind of betrays us a little bit. The Greek doesn't say that she did him homage, because homage could be a number. You could pay homage to a king. You could pay homage to an athlete, you know, somebody. You just honor them, right? She doesn't pay Jesus homage. What the Greek says is she came and bowed down in worship. So something has happened from when this woman first approaches Jesus and says, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David," as a Gentile woman seeing him as a miracle worker, hoping maybe he's a magician, maybe he'll cure my daughter, so I'm going to give it a shot, I've tried everything else, right? She went from that, he's a powerful guy, to now she's worshiping him. Something has changed. There's been a shift that has taken place. And now she worships him and says, "Lord, help me."